You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Badass habits. It's the only intro Jen Sincero needs. Here we go.
Let's do it.
So, Jen Sincero, author of You Are a Badass. The whole badass thing became a brand. Now you just came out with the book, Badass Habits. How's it going?
It's going great. Remarkably so, since we're all still spinning around in this strange universe.
Yeah, it is a strange universe. And do you find that, what are the difficulties people have had coming out of the pandemic? Are they still as much of a badass? Are they more of a badass? Is it harder to be a badass?
where does the badass scale leave them?
Yes.
Well, first of all, I'm having trouble being a badass, to be perfectly honest. Like, to write a motivational book in the height of the pandemic when I could barely lift my arms or get out of my pajamas was very interesting. And I think it really led to the book being a lot more interesting, and it let me get in on a bunch of different angles than I ever would have. So I'm pretty grateful about that. And so I feel like personally, it's definitely affected me, and I feel like people are definitely out there struggling with new challenges and overwhelm and confusion and, you know, just sort of, I don't know about you, but my brain is not always available for work.
Yeah, no, I can't wait to dive into this Badass Habits book, because a lot of the bad habits you mentioned,
yeah,
I feel like I've been developing.
Yeah.
And I didn't have them before the pandemic.
Mm.
And so you know, we see all these strange things happening in the world right now. Like, people aren't going to work anymore. Like, everybody's yeah. having problems finding employees. There's all this supply chain stuff. There's yep. wave 5, 6, 7 of COVID. There's so much uncertainty that must drive people insane. And I find that it's harder to have a positive attitude.
Mm.
And I'm curious about this. Do you
yeah.
think you can talk yourself into a positive attitude? Like, let's say you suddenly realize, oh gosh, I used to always be optimistic, and now I think, oh, if I try something, it's not going to turn out well. I have this negative attitude. But am I just bullshitting myself if I try to develop the habit of a positive attitude?
Listen, I do not subscribe to the belief that we all have to be all Pollyanna all the time and think positive thoughts. Like, that is something that drives me nuts. And I think a lot of people think self-help is idiotic because of that. You know, we're humans. We have emotions. If you suppress them, you're going to grow a tumor, right? So you got to feel everything. But to your point, I actually do think that there is a way to spin this, right? We are humans. We can spin anything. And I think this uncertainty that you mentioned, that really it's so, like, the rug has been ripped out from under all of us. I think it is such an opportunity to wake up to the reality. We're on a ball in infinite space. There is no certainty anyway. So what does that mean? It means that it's always been there, and now it's just more in our faces. So I feel like it's an opportunity to stop playing it safe, first of all, right? Like, we stay in jobs we hate because there's quote unquote security. We stay in relationships because we're afraid we can't find a better person if we're not happy with that person. We stay with the friends that we've got because we're afraid if we don't stick with them and they're not serving us that we can't find better ones. There's no certainty in any of that anyway. Does that make sense? So I feel like, this is really an opportunity for us to stop kidding ourselves and to really face uncertainty and be like, all right, holy crap, I am on a ball in infinite space. Uncertainty is all over the place. So I'm just going to really tap into what brings me joy and what feels right and do it anyway, in spite of these gigantic fears that are, you know, sitting on my neck right now.
And I think the more uncertainty there is, the more people want to control. Because to have some sense of that they know where they're going, that everything's going to be fine.
Right.
And I feel like that, I was cruising along well in the first half of COVID. And then suddenly it was like, you know what? I haven't had a good win in a while. I want a win.
Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned on so you define what habits are. You have lots of great stories. In all your books, there's always such amazing stories. And you have these 21 days for building badass habits.
Yeah.
And one of those 21 days involves surrender. And I feel like this is a habit I've sort of, or a process I've sort of lost a little bit.
Interesting.
And I used to have a really great, I'll call it a habit. I don't know if it's part of the process or a habit itself, but whenever things were difficult, I always was really good at surrendering, just trusting the force or whatever. And lately it's been a little more challenging. So let's talk about it. Like, first off, what define habit?
A habit is something that you do on autopilot. Your brain just puts certain things on autopilot and you don't have to think about them anymore. That's a habit.
So like a good habit might be every morning, you wake up and you brush your teeth, or every morning you wake up and you look forward to the day.
Right.
A bad habit might be you wake up and you think about that person who wronged you 6 months ago, and you really want to write that email to that person 6 months later. And the habit of thinking that way, the first moment you wake up, is a bad habit.
Correct.
Along with, you know, all the usual things like eating and whatever.
Right.
So, okay. What's a time when you've wanted to change a bad habit?
I think, though, I talk about this in the book because it was such an epic one for me, but quitting smoking was huge because I still love smoking. I'm actually going to start again when I'm 85. I can't wait. It's totally giving me a reason to stay healthy. Well,
but wait, what if they expand lifespan so that you're going to live to 150?
All right, then I'll just, you know, I'll course correct. But right now it's 85.
All right. Fair enough.
So that was a habit that it seemed insurmountable to me and that really schooled me on how we can change something that seems almost impossible. I did a lot of different things, like, you know, I talk about in the book how really it's so dumbed down. One of the best ways to anchor in a new habit and or get rid of a bad habit is ease. So if you just make it easy for yourself or difficult for yourself if you're trying to quit something, that is incredibly productive. So, you know, throwing away the cigarettes, not going to bars, not hanging out with other people who smoke, you know, stupid stuff like that really makes a difference if you take the time to really get clear on the specifics of it. But for me, the thing that really did more than anything was the identity piece. So when you're changing a habit, identifying as the kind of person who already embodies the new habit is critical. So for example, I started identifying as somebody who was really healthy, who had pink healthy lungs, who took great care of her body. I did not identify as somebody who was trying to quit smoking or who was an ex-smoker. So what this did was it knocked out the negotiation process. So for example, I don't wake up in the morning and negotiate about the, you know, whether or not I'm going to drink a bottle of vodka, because I don't identify as somebody who drinks a bottle of vodka every morning for breakfast. So when you shift your identity, you don't enter into the negotiation process of, oh, I'll just have one drag, or it's not going to kill me just to have one cigarette with this cocktail I'm having. You don't even enter into the negotiations because you've removed yourself from that identity.
So is that, again, like, are you trying to convince yourself of something you're not? Because maybe you are I'm not the type of person to run a marathon. So It's hard for me to identify as that type of person. And my brain will call bullshit on me.
Ah, yes. That's an I love talking to you. You always nail me to the wall in these things. So there's this fake it until you make it kind of thing, right? So you may not be up to speed in the day-to-day. Your habits may not be up to speed. Your identity may not be up to speed. But it's creating a new groove in your head. So you know that expression, we get caught in ruts, right? Our beliefs create almost ruts in our neural pathways. And identity can be one of those ruts where I'm an ex-smoker. It's so hard to quit smoking. I love cigarettes. I can't have a cocktail without a smoke, all that stuff, right? That's in my very, very, very deep rut of my identity. When you shift your identity, the new groove is way shallower. So you just have to keep instilling it. You have to surround you have to create an environment that supports that. You have to create thoughts. You have to watch your words. At first, it is kind of bullshit, but your desire and your intention can override the bullshit meter.
Yeah, I do believe that. Like, I remember identity is this amorphous thing. Like, there's no real, like, when you're with one person, you have one identity. When you're at your work, you have another identity. There's no real one identity that we have.
Right.
And I remember 30 years ago or more, 35 years ago, I was switching majors in college from like anthropology to computer science. And I came home for a vacation and suddenly I was fixing the VCR. Like, so, you know, that's an ancient term for
for you youngsters out there.
Yeah. So suddenly I thought I did identify as someone who fixes things, which I never did before, because now I was like in a science as opposed to, you know, a social science. Uh-huh. So I think you can like shift identity like that. But one thing I wonder is what's the role of consequence? Like, I have never smoked, but I imagine if I was trying to stop smoking, I would think, hey, I want to live so I can see my grandchildren or something like that.
It's huge. I mean, and that's what's going to keep you going, because if you don't attach to the consequence, you don't have, you know, it's not just the initial excitement of changing something. You got to stay at it for a long time before it becomes a habit and before it becomes on autopilot. So staying really attached to your why, as I call it, you know, why are you doing it? And that why will call up emotion. And we are creatures who are motivated by emotion, not necessarily rational thought, if you're anything like me. So it is about getting that emotion in your body so that when that, you know, really tasty cigarette is in front of you, you don't go for it.
So what happened? So you identified as someone who is not a smoker. What happened next?
Then I threw away all my cigarettes. I had to quit drinking for a while because that was really my main trigger. And I just had this wall up around any negotiation process for me. Those were the main things. And I also did it day by day, you know, that one day at a time thing. It's real, because if I'm like, I am not going to smoke a cigarette for the rest of my life, that's daunting. But if you're just like, just for today, just for one day, I'm going to see if I cannot smoke a cigarette. And then you do it for one day, and then you wake up the next morning and you do it for another day, and you chunk it down into manageable pieces so you don't have a full-on freak out about it.
I think that's really important, what you're talking about with the ease of getting into the new habit. Like, if you just try to stop cold, it's just not going to work, I think, in general. And how can you, it's almost like you want to, if you're practicing archery, you want to bring the target super close at first, and then you'll hit a bullseye every time.
Yeah.
So can it work with smoking where, okay, I'm just going to have one cigarette a day, and then 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have one cigarette every other day? Or, you know, how can you make all these, habit changing easy?
Yeah, I mean, everybody is different. For myself, I was such a glutton that it was, if I had one drag, I was up to a pack and a half a day. So I think it also really is about being real about who you are and how you work best. So maybe tapering off is the best way to do it, or maybe using the patch or whatever other things they have works for some people. For me, I'm a very extreme person. I am very all in or all out. So I knew for me, just cold turkey was going to work. But absolutely, whatever gets you there, there's no right or wrong way.
Right. And you know, you mentioned that when you are around alcohol, you have to limit your alcohol, because I guess, like, let's say you go to a bar, you have a drink, it's natural to take out a cigarette and start smoking. And so, and you talk about boundaries and triggers throughout the book, in terms of changing badass, changing so you can have badass habits.
Uh-huh.
And the triggers is a key thing. Like, you know, if I'm around a computer, I might look at social media. Or if I'm, with family, I might have some negative thoughts. And you talk a lot about boundaries. Mm. I think it's really hard, though, to change all these things, to kind of figure out what the triggers are and then eliminate them.
You know what? It's harder not to, because if you just let it slide and you don't sit down, I mean, and this stuff, it's so funny. Like, we get into overwhelm so easy. Like, I have so many triggers. It's going to be impossible. And then, or it's like that whole thing with email where you're like, I have 10 trillion emails to answer. I can't even answer one. So I'm just going to go take a nap.
That's me. That's what I do.
I know. I've been watching you. So, but then when you actually sit down to do it, like the other day, this is totally embarrassing. I hate taking showers. Like, I just find it so inconvenient. And like, I got to take my clothes off and get wet. Then I got to dry off and I have long hair. And I was like, okay, I am going to time it so that I can stop being, I mean, and I do shower, by the way, people, but I timed it just so I could get out of my own drama. And I was like, I can like be from sitting down here and done with the shower, everything taken care of in under 20 minutes. So it took the drama out of it for me. I don't know. But I just think quantifying what your overwhelm is such an important thing to do, because those 10 trillion emails that you have to answer, maybe it will take you 30 minutes. And that's not such a big damn deal, but we get so overwhelmed by vagueness. So the same thing with habits. I'm trying to remember what the hell the question was, but with triggers. So when you take, I'm serious, like 4 to 5 minutes and sit down and be like, all right, so I'm going to quit smoking. And what are my triggers? And just make a list. Like, specifics are the key to freedom. So you make a list of the specific triggers, the people you hang out with, who you smoke with, the booze, first thing in the morning, whatever, when you get stressed out. Figure out what your triggers are and figure out how you can avoid them. Or an excellent other tip is, when that trigger happens, you replace the action of smoking a cigarette with something healthy. So for me, it'd be like downing a glass of water. Every time I had the urge for a cigarette, I would drink a whole glass of water, which would occupy my mouth, which was great. And it's also very important to hydrate. So you can use them to your advantage too.
That's really interesting to find a replacement habit.
Mm-hmm.
That's very valuable. So you talk about fears, that often we have fears in terms of changing your habits. Was there anything you were afraid of when you were stopping smoking? Like, were you afraid you wouldn't be able to hang out with your friends as much? Or what was going through your head?
You know, with the smoking one, I was probably, my biggest fear was that I would slip up and have to quit again, because believe me, I had quit a trillion times. You know, I quit all the time. but I use that fear actually was kind of helpful, because I was like, it's such a pain in the ass to quit. It's such, you have to just really gather all your strength. So I use that fear to my advantage. But I will say that for a lot of people, you know, there is no change without loss. And I think on a very subconscious level, I know it's one of the main reasons that people don't change their lives for the better, because they are scared of losing old friends. They're scared of shedding their old identity, right? Talk about, you know, the unknown and the unfamiliar. When you shift who you're being, you will lose people, you will lose your identity, you'll lose situations, you'll lose a sense of familiarity. And, you know, the number one thing that scares the hell out of people is change, which is hilarious because it's the pretty much the only constant we've got in this life of ours.
But we are afraid of it. And mm-hmm. I think that's why we love our habits. Like our habits
yes.
define us and they're shortcuts so that we don't have to change.
Exactly. But even the habits that suck, like that's why we stay in jobs we hate and relationships we hate and in bodies we hate that don't feel good. Like we'd rather stay the same instead of make positive changes because of that fear of the unknown and because of our love of the familiar. We see it all the time. I mean, it's extreme, you know, people stay in abusive relationships because it's familiar on some level. I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
Let's talk about that for a second. Okay, we don't have to talk about abusive relationships, even like relationships that are just not right for you. You're not
right.
in love with the person or whatever. Mm-hmm. There could be, you're afraid you're not going to find someone. Like one thing I was always afraid of is that I would get out of this relationship and the next day I would get hit by a truck and be paralyzed and then I would never meet anyone ever again. That was my big fear.
So don't leave the house. Yeah.
Right. And I was afraid to disappoint someone else. Like that was the final fear there. So it's all these fears combined that are kind of unrelated to each other. How do you break these habits?
Well, you, first of all, quantify the fear. So when you do the kind, you know, awareness is the key to freedom. So you become aware of what your specific fear is, right? So let's use your fear of, what was it, getting hit by a bus the next day?
And then, okay. I'd be paralyzed. And
you're
then
paralyzed. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very specific.
Okay, good. I love it. So you look at the fear. I'm going to get hit by a bus and be paralyzed and never meet anybody. So is that true? First of all, do any paralyzed people have loving, awesome relationships with other people?
Yes.
Right. So then you don't even know. Maybe because you become paralyzed, you will meet like this wonderful person that you never would have met had you not been paralyzed.
Yeah, no, it's really true. Like when I've been broke a bunch of times and I always assumed nobody would like me if I went broke. But I actually think overall I became a better, more self-aware person from the experience of failure and going broke and so on. And so you're right. There's that. Then there's the fear of disappointing someone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say you get into a new relationship with somebody awesome and you totally, totally disappoint them. Then what?
Nothing. Oh, no. Well, okay. No, okay. Then I was always afraid they would talk poorly about me to people we know in common.
Okay, so they talk poorly about you to people that you know in common. Then what?
Then people will laugh about me behind my back.
Okay, then what?
I will lose friends when because the person might have been lying. And so I'll lose friends because they were lying.
Then what?
I'll have to make new friends and I'll be upset because I liked my old friends.
Who believe lies about you and don't actually ask you if it's true or not and give you the benefit of the doubt?
Yes, and believe it or not, this has happened and I did get disappointed that my friends who were thought my friends did not give me the benefit of the doubt.
Right? So, and do you have some new friends who do?
Yeah, but fewer.
It's about quality, not quantity. Who wants a bunch of people who are gonna desert you like that?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's just hard. You get into the bad habit of not realizing that this is for the best. You take the negative view instead of the positive view.
Listen, in the moment, again, you don't have to be all Pollyanna in the moment. Like, this is great that this woman has deserted me and is bad-mouthing me to everybody I love. Like, I don't expect people to go there immediately at all. And every feeling that you have about that matters and is real and important. However, getting so mired in it and only focusing and believing that that's the only outcome is going to create that outcome and you're going to stay in that space of only looking there as opposed to surrendering and then welcoming in other relationships that you probably would never have made had you not been set free from the ones that ended up not being that great for you.
So it seems like a lot of changing habits is really focusing on mindset, like this ability to, like you called it earlier, like almost change your identity or not like in a Superman Clark Kent kind of way, but in a, or maybe it isn't that kind of way, but yeah. more in a kind of just how you internally view yourself. And you know, you talk about this in your other books too, particularly as regards, for instance, money. And you talk about that in this book. If you think to yourself all the time, I'm not the type of person who can make money. I'm never going to make money, as opposed to thinking I do deserve money and it's fun to make money and money is, I'm free to make money. How much of a difference does mindset make in a situation like that? Like, let's say I work just as hard, regardless of the mindset.
Right.
What's the importance of mindset?
It is everything. It literally is everything. So I'm going to go on a bit of a long-winded explanation because it's so, so important. So, you know, that whole saying, you whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. And that is all about mindset. So two people can be doing the exact same thing, taking the same exact actions, but have two different mindsets. So, and I'll use myself as an example. Like back in the day when I was living in a garage, totally broke, my mindset was, I'm not the kind of person who makes money. It's really hard to make money. I'll have to do things I hate. I'll lose all my morals if I go after the young, only dollar, blah, blah, blah. And so my unconscious mantra was always, I can't afford it, right? You could say anything to me, and my response 9 times out of 10 would be like, well, that'd be great, but I can't afford it. So when I started doing this mindset work and, you know, started to really change my wealth consciousness, as we call it, I noticed that my mantra was, I can't afford it. So one of the first things, actually the first thing in that 21-day thing that I have in Badass Habits is we work on rewriting your crappy mantra around whatever habit it is you're trying to change. So I rewrote, and there's a whole way to do it, and it's all around emotion and specific words. But so I took I can't afford it and changed it to money flows to me easily and freely, which, believe me, the bullshit monitor was going through the roof on that one because I was still living in a garage, driving a car with no grill, like the whole thing. But freedom and ease and flow, like those words when it came to money, were so out of my first mantra, but they also excited me so much. I was like, yeah, ease. Like, I want some freaking ease around here. It's just such a drama every time I make a dollar. And so those words had real meaning to me. So even though I didn't 100% believe them, I was really psyched about them. So every time I wanted to say, I can't afford it, I would force myself to say money flows to me easily and freely. And so it did a couple of things. It made me feel better. Feels a lot better to say money flows easily and freely than I can't afford it, right? It's just, it's lighter. It's not as heavy. And the other thing it did, which I think is so fascinating, and I write a lot about this in the book, is human beings love to be right. We love it more than almost anything. And I believe it's because we're on a ball in infinite space and everything is uncertain. So we need to be right because if we're not right, we're kind of freaking out because we have no rug under us, right? So it's a very primal thing, the need to be right and sure about your environment and the way things are and to have some sense of security. So even when it's working against us, we white knuckle this need to be right. Like, I can't make money. I'm living in a damn garage. Like, who do you think you are saying that it could happen for me? It obviously can't. I'm in my 40s. It's never going to happen, right? So I fought tooth and nail to be right about I can't afford it. So the power of shifting your mantra and your belief system to money flows me easily and freely is I'm no longer building a foundation of proof that I'm right, that I can't afford it. Now, because I'm still human and I still love to be right, I'm trying to build a foundation of truth around money flows to me easily and freely. So now I'm looking for proof of that. So even something as stupid as finding a dollar on the ground, money flows to me easily and freely. Every time I would get a new job, like instead of being like, ugh, I'm never going to be able to survive just on this one freelance job that just came in, I would make myself be like, okay, see, it does. Money flows to me easily and freely. So it shifts your emotional state and it also shifts what you're looking for. Everything you need to change your life is already here. But when you have the blinders on of having the need to be right about the stuff that's not serving you, and when you take off those blinders, opportunities that you never would have gone for before suddenly become possible because money flows to me easily and freely.
I think that's a key thing because it's sort of like the Honda Civic rule. Like if you buy a Honda Civic, suddenly you notice all the other Honda Civics on the road.
Exactly.
And so if you suddenly have a positive mindset about money, all these opportunities that were there all the time, you start to notice and actually you start to develop the abilities to take advantage of those opportunities. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, Of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast, and the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
So what happened with you specifically? Like, you've obviously gone from the garage to more success. Like, what happened along the way?
So one of the most, a million things, but really the most profound thing that just blew it wide open for me was I was so over being broke that I was like, I am going to do whatever it takes, which means making myself very uncomfortable and going to these seminars that if any of my friends had saw me in, I never would live it down, you know, like with the name tag and the high-fiving and all that, whatever, that I was way too cool for that. By the way, totally changed my life. So I'm at one of these money-making seminars and I'm in my little rah-rah thing. And this coach gets up on stage and she's talking about how she helps women entrepreneurs make money. And just the way that she was talking, she was hitting every single thing that I was coming up against. And I was like, oh my God, this woman has designed this entire speech for me. I've got to hire her as my coach. And at the time I was making very little money and her fee for coaching was 1/3 of my annual income.
Oh gosh.
And so I, and this was way, this was like 15 years ago, let's say, you know, life coaching now. I mean, and still, I don't even think you need any kind of certification. And back then it was super snake oil salesy and I was really snarky anyway, but I had this intuition or this impulse is like, I need her help. And I, 1/3 of my annual income, are you fucking kidding me? Like that was so impossible. Now, if my mantra had still been, I can't afford it, which would have, you know, come in real handy right then. I wouldn't have hired her, but because I was so obsessed with money flows to me easily and freely, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I put it on my credit card and I ended up and I literally threw up and then begged her to give me my money back. And thank God she was like, I will not give you your money back. And this may be the most important money you've ever spent. And then I did every single terrifying thing she told me to do. And I tripled my income in 3 months.
So A, what were some of the terrifying things she told you to do?
She told me to start an online, business, which it's a very long story, but I'd already published a couple of books. And she's like, you could teach women entrepreneurs how to write and sell their nonfiction book proposals. And I was in a rock band. I was really cool. And I was like, I'm going to be a cheesy ass online marketer who's like the book proposal lady. I was like, are you fucking like, this is not who I am. She's like, that's great. Would you rather be broke and cool or rich and cheesy right now? I was like, rich and cheesy. So I did that, which was an identity shift for me that, you know, was extremely uncomfortable. And of course, I didn't have to stay in that exact space, but it did get me. I never would have written You Are a Badass if I hadn't done that. I can explain that, but.
And so like, how did you get your first clients? And were you afraid to ask for a certain price?
Oh my, and she made me ask for a price that was extremely way outside my comfort zone. And every time I taught the course, she made me double it. And every time I doubled it, I was like, these people are going to think I am the greediest, la, 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 and nobody's going to be able to afford it. I'm going to lose all my clients. And she's like, you'll lose some and you'll gain some that are willing to pay that. And sure enough, I mean, it was so, the whole thing was so uncomfortable. I mean, it was, but you have to do stuff that scares the hell out of you or else you're going to stay exactly where you are because you got there by doing the easy thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened? So you got those first clients, like you advertised on Facebook or something, or you told people like, hey, I'll put your nonfiction book proposal together. I charge $1,000 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Can you say what you charged?
The first class was like $350. And it was an 8-week course. I coached them through writing theirs. But here's the thing. The reason she thought it would be such a good plan is because I was already involved in this women's entrepreneurial network. So she's like, you already have access to all these women. So I used that as sort of my first, and I hustled my ass off and I studied online marketing, which is incredibly, you know, people test down to the, like if a capital T converts more sales than a lowercase T, you know, it's a science. So I got really schooled on online marketing. I did free Facebook calls. I learned lead generation. Like, I got into this whole world that I knew nothing about. I was actually just talking to a friend this morning about how entrepreneurism is like, I don't know, 75% marketing and then 25% doing the actual job. You know, it's about marketing. Otherwise, it's a hobby.
Yeah, it's so funny. I have this conversation with my business partner all the time. Most of our conversations are not about products or, you know, improving the product or whatever. Mm-hmm. We made the product, we assume it's good. But most of the conversation is about psychology, like our psychology, the psychology that people were dealing with, and which is essentially marketing. Like, yes. How do we talk to somebody to, you know, get a positive result? And you're right. And people don't know that about entrepreneurship. They think mm-hmm. it's about going out on your own, being iconoclastic and different and, you know, providing, you know, of course you want to provide value. That's part of it. But you have to be able to sell. You have to be able to execute on selling something.
Yeah.
And finding demand. Finding demand for something is very difficult. So then what, I'm always curious, like, what led to you are a badass? Because mm-hmm. this is fundamental to you change your habits from garage to you're the badass woman. And that was a huge game changer.
Yeah. So this online marketing thing where I was going to be rich and cheesy instead of cool and broke. You know, and I studied it and I learned the capital T versus the lowercase t and all that stuff. So I think this is a really important thing for everybody to really think about. What the next right step isn't necessarily forever, right? So believe me, I did not want to be the book proposal lady. I did not, you know, the online marketing thing. But the most important thing for me was to get out of debt and to get out of financial struggle. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do what it takes. And it wasn't like I was becoming a ballerina. Like, I was already a writer. I was already kind of coaching people. Like, it wasn't so far out of my zone of what I was already doing and who I already identified as. But it was super fucking cheesy compared to, you know, the whole enchilada. But the good news is, with online marketing, I had to write newsletters like 3 or 4 times a week. And I would write them in my voice. Like, I would write them the way I wrote. So I was taking something that I perceived to be pretty cheesy and writing it in my authentic writerly voice. And so when I was, again, reading every self-help book under the sun, because I was on a fucking journey to get this all figured out. And a lot of these books changed my life, such incredible authors and information. But I'm a writer, so I kept being like, I could write this and I could make it 10 times funnier and much more engaging and much quicker to the point, man. Like, I'm from New York and I'm really impatient and I just want the damn information. Like, just give it to me straight. Tell me what I got to do and I'll go do it. So I made them also very to the point. And so that's how You Are a Badass came to be, is I decided to write my own version of these self-help books. But I don't know if I ever would have done it if I already hadn't been doing this online marketing thing and taking something that was not, you know, my brand and making it my brand.
And I think this is a critical point, which is that you were in the garage or whatever, you weren't feeling good about yourself financially, but you started with mindset, then you started taking actions. And I imagine the more you take action, the more you're believing the mindset, the more you're identifying right. as the person who does this. And it's kind of like this 1% a day type of thing where
yes.
it starts to compound. Like, if you do this every day, like, then you started figuring, okay, well, I need to learn online marketing and I need to charge more. Then you started reading about online marketing. Then you started doing online marketing. Then you started getting clients and getting more confidence. And suddenly you were a badass.
Right.
And then you also had the confidence and ability to write the book and the confidence and the ability to sell the book, just like you were helping other people do. And that book has become a mega bestseller. Like, it's one of the best-selling self-help books like ever. I mean, it's changed your life, you know, how to be a badass.
It still absolutely stupefies me what's happened with that book.
I know I want to talk more about badass habits, but this is... Uh-huh. totally related to it. Like, what changed? What are some of the amazing things that happened afterwards?
After You Are a Badass?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it didn't it was a slow build. Like, we didn't hit the New York Times bestseller list until 3 years after it was published, which is super weird, but it's because—
That's unbelievable. I never heard of that before.
Yeah, and then it stayed on for 4.5 years. It's still on. It's on and off still, so—
Why do you think it took, what was the trigger like 3 years later?
It was word of mouth. So no matter how much we promoted and did all the, you know, bells and whistles, it was a kind of book because I'll tell you, I believe timing is everything. I'm really proud of the book. I think it's a good book and I nailed it timing wise because now you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a self-help book with a bright cover and a curse word in the title, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, there was that trend.
Yeah. So, but I just got there first. So it was the first one. And then also, I guess the voice and, you know, whatever. If it appealed to somebody, they would go out and buy 10 copies and give it to their friends. And then that friend, if they liked it. So my community just spread it like wildfire. And it took a while because, you know, over time, more and more people kept passing it along. But I call it the yellow snowball because it just kept growing and growing and growing. So that's how it happened.
Well, that's really exciting. So, and now you, and obviously it led to other badass books, including this Badass Habits. And you've also did You Are a Badass at Making Money. And I'm trying to think where
the— You Are a Badass Every Day. What's the little guy? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forget. We did a podcast, I think, on the Making Money one.
Yes. And that was a fun one.
Yeah. But mindset really is critical because there's mindset and there's ease. I feel like the ease part is a really important point. Like, if you put your vitamins by the sink where you, I don't know, wash your hands every morning, you're more likely to take the vitamins, you know, that sort of thing. So what are some other ways to create ease in these habits? Like, let's say I also want to, I mean, again, some of these habits are harder than others. Like, if I want to get into the habit of, I don't know, what's like a simple habit that people change? I want to get the habit of reading every morning. That's one kind of habit. But if I want to get into the habit of thinking that I'm capable of making a lot of money, that's a kind of a complicated mindset mm-hmm. and habit change, I think. And, you know, what are ways to make that mindset change easy?
Okay, well, first of all, how hard is it, like, mindset? It's just a thought and it's just words and it's just creating a deep groove, right? So when you really think about the effort involved, it's not necessarily physical, which I tend to find much more difficult.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really not. And I remember back in the day, like when I was like reading all these books about change, you know, think positive thoughts and I was like, come on, like it can't be that easy. I cannot have like been spending 40 years of my life being completely broken, scraping by, if it really is all about mindset. It almost pissed me off. Like, and I do think we make things harder because we need the drama or we feel like it's more mysterious or whatever. But it is so epically about mindset. I'm not saying you don't have to do stuff. You can't just sit around, you know, meditating and stuff is going to appear magically. But it really, really, really starts with that. I mean, we've all done it. Like, think about, you know, if you're riding a bike up a hill, there is a point where you suddenly are like, fuck it, and you get off and start walking, right? And there's also a point where you're like, I'm just gonna make it to the top. I'm just gonna do these like 20 more yards. And especially if you're riding alongside somebody else, if they're just a little bit ahead of you, you'll push yourself harder, right? What does push yourself mean? It's a mindset. It literally is just like pushing your mind past the place where you normally give up. So it's all about mindset. Your mindset informs the actions you take. So, okay, so to answer your question, so I'm changing my mindset about money. The steps I take is I start reading wealth consciousness books, you know, Think and Grow Rich, You're Badass at Making Money. The Science of Getting Rich was the one that really worked for me. There are no lack.
I love that one, by the way, Wallace
Waddles. Oh my God, the Waddles, right? I loved that book and it was really short.
Yeah, it's short. And again, it's one of those things where like, should I really be doing what he suggests? Does this work? But it can't hurt.
What do you have to lose? What the yeah, hell do the you whole, have to lose? Yeah.
That's the whole idea is that I'll probably at least be happier even if I don't make money, if I take his approach.
It's interesting. What do you have to, seriously, what is the big whoop-de-doo? So, you know, reading the books, that's not hard. Like, and having that book by your bed, knowing which book you are reading and you are reading for 10 minutes every single morning or whatever you're like getting it on the schedule and doing it. And then, you know, for me, music was so huge, still is. Like, my mood can change in an instant depending on what I'm listening to. So I did, you know, I was talking about how I put a moratorium on listening to Neil Young, even though I love Neil, but he makes me so depressed. So when I had to like have energy to go do stuff that was challenging, I would make myself listen to Led Zeppelin or I don't know what the hell it was, but something that pumped me up more. So that's real. Going out in nature and walking around, being physical, gets my energy going, can get me out of being depressed to feeling motivated. Certain people, I get off the phone with certain people, I feel like I can't do anything or I feel like I can flip over a Buick, you know? But the thing is getting specific. So if you're changing your wealth consciousness, you've got to surround yourself with people who have a really healthy attitude about money, who go out and make it and don't have shame about it and don't think all rich people suck. And, you know, you got to surround yourself with people who are either where you want to be or past where you want to be. Other people are epic. And I know like the big thing is, well, I don't know anybody like that. You know, water does seek its own level. And we do hang out with people who are in our zone, who make us familiar. So when you change your identity, you know, without a doubt, every single time I get a talk, I get asked this question every time. And people are always like, what do you do when the people closest to you don't support your growth? And the reason it comes up every time is because A, it's really upsetting when you feel like you're fracturing these, you know, lifelong relationships. And B, it happens every single time you change yourself. Every single time you are going to lose somebody because you're basically killing off your old identity. And these people, and you know, people hate it when you kill the people they love, basically. And you're changing and that's not okay. And so that's obviously going to change your relationship. And also you're holding a mirror up to them being like, you know, listen, if I can do it, you can do it because we're in the same place.
They don't like to hear that.
They don't like to hear that. People hate unsolicited advice. So that is why when you go to lose weight or you decide you're going to get married or you decide you're going to get rich or you're going to quit your steady job and, you know, do whatever the hell you want to do, when you shift who you're being, the people closest to you are upset because they're the ones who stand to lose the most, right? Meanwhile, the guy down the street's like, go you, and your partner or your mother or your friends are making fun of you, or they're filling you with all these reasons why it's not going to work, or they're dragging you down. You know, I certainly got made fun of by so many of my friends. Are you kidding me? Like when I decided I was going to make money, it was, you know, I definitely lost friends over it. And I definitely gained new friends that are in, you know, that hold me up to a certain standard. And a lot of my old friends were supportive, but not all of them.
And so what does it mean you lost friends? Like, did suddenly people specifically say, I hate you, or they just stopped talking to you? Like, what happened, and were you upset? Like, how'd you deal with it?
I got dumped by a couple people. You know, one in particular who I'd been friends with for like 20 years, who was really close to me, just never spoke to me again and never really explained why. But I'm assuming that's what it was, but I can't imagine it was anything else. I don't know, but I'm assuming that was it. I got made fun of a lot, especially my family's pretty snarky. And, you know, they're like, oh, you know, Miss Moneybags or whatever. I still, you know, but I'm getting the last laugh. It's like, okay, you can make fun of me, but I'm going to Italy for lunch. Have fun, you know, so.
Yeah, well, one thing I learned is that you can never ask why. Why is this person doing this? Because you're never going to find out the correct answer, and there might not be an answer. They might not know the
answer. Well, you can. I mean, and certainly if it's a friend or, you know, a person in your life that's really worth it, it can bring you closer. And I can, you know, you can confront them and be like, you know, I've noticed that this is making you really uncomfortable, and I love you, and I'd like to talk this out, and I'd like to hear why. And then, you know, maybe it's going to get better, maybe it's going to get worse. But if it's a relationship worth keeping, it's worth having an uncomfortable conversation about.
You know, I also like this idea of, you talk a lot about non-negotiations, like you don't want to negotiate with yourself. So like, oh, I'll have this one cigarette, but I'll run an extra lap in the morning. You know, so it's sort of like you have to have everything kind of figured out in advance of how you're going to change a habit. That's an important part of the process. Because you also talk about rewarding yourself.
Yes.
So you're allowed to reward yourself, but it seems like you should figure out those rewards in advance as opposed to negotiating every day about it.
Yes, because it takes time, you know, to like, if you know what you're, this is all part of the ease thing. If you know what your roadblocks are, like if you know that booze is going to trip you up, if you know that if you're trying to write a book and your kid's coming barreling in, like getting somebody to take care of your kids for the time you're writing, like, or if you know that social media is going to distract you turn off the internet, get a babysitter. Like, there are things you can do. You do not need to be a victim of your environment if you plan ahead. And again, planning ahead, 5 minutes of your time. Like, think about it. What is going to throw you off course? And then set yourself up for success. It's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, it could be not that hard, or it could be. That's the problem. Is that, you know, because it's like you say, it's not easy. Like, it takes time. Like, how long mm-hmm. do you think it takes on average to like let's say, you know, you talk about identifying yourself as the type of person who could make money or who could do X or could learn languages, or let's say I want to be better at playing basketball. Can I really think of myself, I'm identifying myself as a semi-pro basketball player? Like, I love this idea of like changing my mindset and identifying myself as someone who's already succeeded at what I'm trying to succeed at. And what's a good way to think about that? Like, what's the limit of that?
You know what I think is a really good way is loosen in your bone, Wilma. Like, just having fun with it, being like, I'm a pro basketball player. Like, it just making, I mean, I talk also about like, just seeing what you can get away with. It doesn't need to be such a big drama. We make such drama out of stuff. And it's like, well, it's not true. I've actually never made a basket in my whole life. So how can I perceive myself as this person? Who cares? Act like a little kid, like play with it a little bit, have some damn fun. You know, this life is very fleeting. So pretend you are what you want to be and sort of play act, and it'll open you up to all the ways that you haven't seen before that can help you actually get to where you want to go.
I agree with that. Like, I think for me, my worst moments, surrender was very important. Mm. Giving myself small challenges along the way, kind of experimenting with what's possible along totally. The way, and looking at what the worst case scenario, like you just did with the losing friends thing or the breaking up relationships thing. What is the actual worst case scenario? Usually it's not as bad as people think.
Right.
Like I think people think the worst case scenario is death or some sort of disappearance.
Uh-huh.
And that's usually not the worst case scenario. Now, do you have so many great stories in the book. Like, what are some situations where somebody really had a hard time changing a habit, and what was the habit and what did they end up doing?
Oh gosh, this is like when somebody asks me to tell a joke. It's like, I've never told a joke. Or where should we eat? I've never eaten out.
Really? You don't eat out?
No, I'm kidding. But it's like, I can never think of a restaurant. Like, it's like, I've never eaten in a restaurant before because my mind goes completely blank. You know, I'll tell you just as in general, it can take time and it can happen overnight. That's something I just want to say, like, no matter how difficult it is, like my journey with making money from being broke took time. But it can also happen overnight. I mean, it's what they call in the self-help world is a quantum leap. Like, it doesn't necessarily need to take forever, but sometimes it does. So I think that you just have to be game to do whatever it takes and to have patience and let it take as long as it takes. But I will tell you right now, I'm totally avoiding your question because I can't think of a specific habit, but the fastest way to change your life, no matter what the hell you're doing, is to do stuff that scares the shit out of you every single day. If you do something that scares the shit out of you that's in the direction of the thing you want to change every day, you will get there so much faster than if you don't.
Like what scares the shit out of you? Like, what's something you do that scares the shit out of you?
Okay.
I'm asking that question again.
Okay. So right now I'm single, and going up and talking to men who I find attractive scares the hell out of me sometimes, especially if he's really hot.
That is scary.
Yeah. So I call it the stranger a day program, and I make myself talk to a stranger a day, and not just like my waiter. It has to be somebody I approach.
I remember reading in the book, you could have as an objective, you want to flirt more, flirt with one person a day.
Yes.
And, you know, start easy, you know, and sometimes that even requires a mindset. Like, I remember talking to somebody who had met the Dalai Lama, and I asked her, what was that like? It was like he was looking at me the way a mother might look at their daughter. So I tried this thing where everybody I saw on the street, I was trying to picture them as if they were my daughter. Whether they were male or female, I tried to picture them as if they were my daughter and how I would feel. And it made me automatically smile at people and think kindly about people. Usually I see people in the street and my instinct is to not like them. And but it kind of changed that for me. So again, it really is important mindset, but then using it in practice. Like, it's one thing to say, oh, I'm the type of person who can do something scary every day. But then you really have to do something scary every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good too, because then you get stories about it. Like, and it's fun conversation. Oh, I did this today.
Yeah. And even if you fail and you're rejected and they're like, get out of my face, you whatever. Like, at least you did it. Like, you've got that and you're getting there and you've got the adrenaline rush and you're making changes. Like, really, man, I feel like the you know, to bring it back around to this pandemic, it's made me realize how short life is and how, even though I feel like everything's at a standstill sometimes, it's also flying by so fast. And why not just see what you can get away with? Why not just, you know, if you have something that you're really excited about or that you really truly desire, why not just see if you can get away with selling a painting for $100,000 or, you know, becoming a pro basketball player or what the hell, who cares?
You know, you have this great quote in the last chapter, which is called The Audacity to Be Yourself. Mm. And the quote is, forming good habits isn't about being perfect. It's about being more of who you are. Mm. And that's such an important quote, particularly the second part. It's about being more of who you are. But sometimes when someone says, oh, James, just be yourself. Oh, you're going to give this talk, just be yourself. Mm. What does it mean, though, to be myself?
Mm. I think first of all, it's about desire, and I think it's really about, it sounds so fucking cheesy, but like following your heart. Like, what is it that you want to talk about that's important? What is it that you think you can connect with the people in front of you on that will light all of you up? You know, it really is about unhooking from what's expected of you or what you think you can do to get people to like you, and really coming from a place of joy. That's who you are.
Yeah, you know, and this is really important. I mean, this is important in every aspect of life, but it's really important in writing. Like, I had to write something for a publication that I had never written before recently, and I wrote my usual thing, and I'm like, oh, they're never going to go for this. This isn't what's in their magazine at all. This is my usual, like, overly revealing, emotional kind of stuff. I just said, well, okay, but this is what people usually like with me, so I'm going to stick with it. And it does work to be yourself, as corny as that sounds.
And they loved it.
They loved it. And if they hadn't, then it wasn't the right fit for me anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. The end.
Yeah. Right? And so, but I do find that during this pandemic, I have gotten a little bit more negative about outcomes for myself. Mm. And I really need to switch mindsets. I got more of the attitude like, that won't work out, as opposed to like, I always think of myself as like super lucky, and I kind of lost that magic a little bit.
Interesting.
And I don't know what it was from. It happened about halfway through. I mean, it's a combination of things, but this is a habit I need to stop.
Well, it's really oppressive. Like, this time we're so spoiled with all of our freedoms and we can do whatever we want. And it's the first time in my life, certainly, that I've really been prohibited from doing things that I totally took for granted. So that's a bit of a spanking and, you know, whatever. So I think the thing is to get, again, into specifics for yourself. Like, why do I think that's not going to work out? And then, okay, so then that, you know, pairing it, peeling the onion back, as it were, the way that we were doing with your fears. Like, okay, so then what? So then what? So then what? Is that true? Is that true? Is that true?
Right.
You know, and I do think for everybody, this is a time of really mastering patience. We have to wait longer for stuff right now. It still could happen overnight, but I think it's about patience and just leaning back and appreciating the silver lining of things going slower, because there is a ton of stuff that I never would have noticed, that I never would have experienced if I hadn't been blocked from running a million miles an hour like I usually do. It's been really educational and challenging and lovely.
Jen Sincero, Badass Habits. When does this book come out?
It's out now in hardcover and paperback December 7th.
And how's it going so far?
Amazingly well. I am just, you know, I'm so proud of everybody for buying it because it means people are sort of like, okay, bitch, pandemic, I'm going to get my act together in spite of you. So it's doing really well. And I'm so grateful to everybody who's been following and buying and working on themselves to make themselves and the world a better place.
And what are you going to do the next book on?
I am not sure. And I am going to do a little bit more speaking, I think, is my plan.
Are there speaking gigs happening now?
I'm writing a performance that I will do when the pandemic lightens up a bit.
Oh, that's neat. What kind of performance?
I honestly don't know yet, but I realize that I'd rather reach more people than crank out more books. Right now, I mean, I will write more, but right now I'm like, okay, I've got this awesome stack of books. It's still helping people. So why don't I get out there and sort of talk? And also, I miss humans, man. I want to see some humans.
Yeah.
I want to sit in a robe in a room by myself and crank out another book right now. I really want to get out in the world.
See, my problem is the pandemic lifestyle was perfect for me. I like sitting in a robe in a room and never leaving. And now people are like, hey, you should go out more. I'm like, I don't know. Not yet. It's not safe yet.
I know.
Jen, thanks once again for coming on the podcast. Badass Habits. I really enjoyed it. It got me thinking about my own negative habit. There's always negative habits to change. There's always drift. Like, you could have positive habits for a long time and then drift. And you have to remind yourself of that, as you put it, remember where you are. Remember to remember.
Exactly.
And it's something I have to do frequently. But thank you for writing this book and for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It is always such a treat to talk to you.
Thanks.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.